Welcome, everyone. My name is Cheryl Vallejos, and our class today is Influencing Others with Communication Skills. Communication and listening in a way that builds support for your ideas is a fabulous thing. When you get that under control, you start building rapport with others, your conversations start going well, and the results is astonishing. When people feel they have less power, it is important that they develop positive personal power. A big part is the ability to get the idea across in constructive, collaborative manner. What do you all feel that, what causes conflict in conversations?
Not listening.
Not listening. Oh, that's a big one. Any other reasons you could think of that cause conflict in communication?
I guess what I would say, this is Alice, I would say that misperceptions, misunderstanding mm-hmm. the other person's point of view or what they are trying to say.
That's very good.
I just say that both parties, if between the two, want the same thing, and there is not enough to go around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, poor communication, sometimes seeking power. Dissatisfaction with a person's management style, weak leadership, lack of openness, change of leadership. There's a lot of different things that cause conflict, but the real thing is being able to recognize it and knowing what to do when it happens. Some of the conflict indicators are body language. You can see when someone starts to shut down, their body language. Disagreements, regardless of the issue. Withholding news, going into silence. So conflict happens in many different ways, but it's just a matter of knowing when it's there and knowing how to get past it. And there are three things that are very important. One is to create safety, and I'd encourage all of you to write this down. The first one, create safety. The second one, have a mutual purpose. And the third is to do it with mutual respect. Do you know what I mean when I say create safety? Who has an idea what that means?
If you agree upon a place to go, if for some reason things get a little hairy, mm-hmm. you have a timeout place, so to speak.
Yes. Creating a safe space is, Liz, I'm going to play with you just a minute here. If we have a conflict that you want to go one place and I want to go another place, creating a safe space would be me saying something like, Liz, I really understand that you want to go there, but tell me what the problem, why you disagree with blah, 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 blah. So
okay.
creating the safe space means not making the other person wrong and being able to have a space that both people feel very comfortable of talking in instead of going to a place of anger or frustration or going into silence. You create a safe space.
I'm sorry. I can't find how to mute this thing.
Number five. Just hit the five.
Okay. I'll be right back. How do I unmute it? Number five?
Four.
Okay, thanks. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So creating a safe space will be the beginning of resolving a conflict in a communication. Mutual purpose. As long as you both can agree what's the outcome that you want from the conversation, it's a whole lot easier to get there. And, Pasha, you brought up this very good point of a misunderstanding that if you're misunderstanding, sometimes you're saying the same thing. But a misunderstanding could be just a matter of paraphrasing back to the person what they said. It could be, well, Liz, I understand you to say that you really would like to go to so-and-so. So if you paraphrase and there is a misunderstanding, at least it gives the other person a chance to explain what they are feeling. Excuse me. So tell me, how long do you think that it takes to build rapport with someone?
I didn't hear the question. I just heard a part of it. You've been blanking in and out.
I have?
Yeah.
Is it that way to everyone?
Not for me.
Okay.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. How long does it take to build...
I'm picking up the phone.
Okay. How long does it take to build rapport with someone?
Some people you can do it quickly, and other people it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm. So it could be minutes, days, months?
Right.
Okay. How long does it take, if you're having a crucial conversation and you break that rapport with someone, how long does it take to fix that rapport?
Sometimes you never fix it.
That's right.
And other times it can take an hour or half an hour or a day.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to build a rapport with someone, but when you break that rapport, it could take a lifetime to fix it. So
right.
Being aware of a conflict in a conversation and knowing how to handle it will get you so much more results. Now, when you're in a conversation with someone and you're thinking that they are just not listening or they are not cooperating, I want you to take your finger and point, like you're pointing to someone, point across the room. So you have one finger pointing at them, right?
Right.
Look where your other three fingers are pointing.
Down.
Back at you.
Well, actually, yeah, curled around to me.
Yeah. So when you point at the other person that they're not listening or that they are wrong or whatever the situation might be, the thing is to look at yourself first, how to work on me first. We can't change other people. Exactly what do socially gifted people do to maintain free-flowing conversations and meanings? They start by working on themselves first. So when you're thinking that it's the other person, stop and think about those three fingers that are pointing at you and what is it that you can do to improve the situation. So rather than torturing over how to change everyone else, they work on their own thoughts and their own actions. And sometimes you cannot do anything about that. Since we really can't change anyone else, it's a lot better to work on ourselves to have a smart place to start. Has anyone ever heard of the fight or flight syndrome?
Yes.
Tell me what you think.
Well, I've heard it as fight or flight, okay. But I can see where bite and fight
is
the same thing.
It is fight and flight.
Oh, okay. That means you either stay and discuss the situation, and it can get heated, or that's the whole concept of fight. It's a heated discussion or heated scenario, or you can just withdraw and say, I'm not going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the flight.
Good. How about anyone else? The bigger muscles in our body are in our upper arms and our legs. And when we're in a heated conversation, that's where the phrase comes from, the fight or flight. So the big muscles in our arms, we want to fight. The big muscles in our legs, we want to flight. We want to run from the conversation. And neither one of those are going to get us the results that we want. So to fight or flight is not going to get the end result, the mutual purpose with the mutual respect. The silence or violence in a conversation, can anyone tell me what that means?
Basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm. What is silence? What are some of the things that deal with silence?
Your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Your actions.
Okay.
And body language.
Yeah, body language.
Right.
Huh? Silence has to do with three main things, and you are all right in saying those, but the three main things are masking, saying only what you think will be accepted. Signs include sarcasm, innuendos, muttering, and sugarcoating. So when you try to mask something, you're going to silence. The next one is avoiding. When you avoid something, you're talking, but not about the hot issue. Signs are uneasy body language or changing the topic. The third one is withdrawing, saying nothing in order to avoid trouble altogether. And that kind of goes back to the silence. The signs indicate refusing to interact and withdrawing from the discussion. Any questions or comments so far?
Well, it's interesting when you said the change topic was a sign of avoiding,
mm-hmm.
because I have been in situations, and Sherry has too,
mm-hmm.
and with a male,
mm-hmm.
and there has come up in the conversation that, well, if you can change the topic and we'll talk about it, but let's get back on topic when we're finished talking about this change topic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hear that said to me, which obviously I believe that I'm dealing with a good communicator,
mm-hmm.
I see as what I'm saying as a relevant topic because it has something to do with what is being said.
Sure, and that very well could
be the
case.
It's like a tangent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if the topic is changed for a reason, that there's something that they want to talk about before you go on to finish the conversation,
right.
That could be a different thing. But
okay.
When you're in a conversation with someone and you could feel that they're avoiding the conversation and they change
okay.
the topic, that's more
okay.
of the silence.
So it's a major topic change.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
The next one is violence, and in the violence, there are also three different ways that this happens. One is controlling, forcing your meaning into the pool, trying to convince and compel others to agree with what you're saying. The tactics include overstating your argument, cutting people off, arguing one side only, and little or no listening. How many of you have ever been in a conversation where you're trying to state a fact or a sentence and someone cuts you off because they want to get their point across?
Right. All the time.
All the time, yeah. And that could be the sign of a controlling personality that is a little less open, and they're trying to force their meaning into the conversation. The next one is labeling. Openly confronting the other person's idea. Tactics include belittling, labeling the idea as stupid or naive, and making the other person feel bad. That's a form of labeling, and all of these fall under violence. The third one is attacking. It's only a half step from attacking an argument to attacking a person. Tactics include openly belittling, labeling, and threatening the other person. Anyone have any encounters with a person like that?
No, thank goodness.
You'll know it when you are.
Sounds like you just described a presidential debate.
Right.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Well, let's talk a little bit about mutual purpose and mutual respect. Dialogue cannot survive without safety, and safety can only exist when people share a common purpose. So both people, if you both want to talk, you have to know what the mutual purpose is to avoid the pool of meaning, to avoid the conflict that could result. So being committed to staying in dialogue and not going to either silence or violence is a big part of getting the results that you want. Mutual respect means that I care about you as a person and vice versa. Maintaining respect doesn't mean that we have to be close buddies. but it does mean that we should see each other's side as worthy of the severity we owe the other as a human being. So no matter what happens in the conversation, we're not going to violate the other person's dignity, period. You always want to remember that. The mutual purpose and the mutual respect is going to get the outcome to be a whole lot better in the conversation than if you try to do it without it. Crucial Conversations. Have any of you read that book?
No.
No? I would highly... Yes. Who's that, Marv?
This is Pete.
Pete, have you read it?
Yes, I just got done with it.
It's a great book, isn't it?
It really is.
They have a new one out now. It's Crucial Confrontation. I would highly recommend both of these to the group. They're, it's some great information. I have the audio part of the book, and it's just, I can continually listen to it because it's just loaded with information. One thing they talk about in Crucial Conversation is the CRIB, C-R-I-B, and C means to commit to a mutual purpose. R is recognize the purpose behind the strategy. I, invent a mutual purpose. And B, brainstorm new strategies. An example of this, I have an Alaska client that her and her husband were having confrontations about what to do with an event after they both get off work. And they were just struggling, trying to reach a conclusion, and it ended up in an argument. But when they talked about, okay, what's the mutual purpose here? The mutual purpose is we both want to be happy in our marriage. We both want the same result in the end. And then handle the conversation with mutual respect. It was amazing the results that they got afterwards just by handling those three things, the safety, the mutual purpose, and the mutual respect. Has anyone heard of living in stories? Do you know what that means?
No.
Using metaphors to explain how things work?
Not quite. Pete, how about you?
Try again.
I don't hear anybody.
I don't either.
How about now?
There you go.
Okay. So living in stories, if you think them out, you act them out. Stories drive our behaviors. If you don't manage them, you simply act them out. A story is like when I'm playing golf, I could live in a story that says something like, I just had a terrible hole. The rest of my game is going to be awful. That's my story. And if I don't manage my stories, I live in my stories. In fact, when my husband and I play, I'm not real competitive or very serious about golf, but when he has a bad hole and he says, oh, there goes my game, I love it because you know what? I'm probably going to win because he's already got it in his head that it's going to be a bad game. So living in your stories, be very, very careful. There's three clever stories. One is victim stories. And here we make ourselves out to be innocent sufferers. This actually takes some skill. Victim stories make us feel sorry for ourselves and turn us into a complaining martyr. They often start with something like, after all I've done for them. So we make ourselves into a victim, and then we create a story, and before you know it, we're living in that story.
That reminds me of the book Celestine Prophecy.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when you brought up the label there, I was thinking of the poor me syndrome.
Yes.
And what this does is it explains the people on a journey and the things that they are identifying in people and how they react, and the ones who really have it together have an understanding of how and why people do what they do.
Yes.
And so there are several syndromes that they point out, and of course the reader can say, oh yeah, I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just really helps you identify your flaws and encourages you to do something about them.
Exactly. Some examples of the victim story is, I don't have time to exercise. I have all this work to do.
Right.
I'm living in a story that's not true. Or, I'm too tired to make supper tonight. I've worked all day long. Well, is that a story? You know, so living in a story, this works really good with my daughter and myself because we've both done so much work on stories that when we're in a conversation, together, it's easy for one or the other of us to say, "Is that your story?" And we kind of call each other on it. In fact, last night, my husband put the trash out, and I asked him to take a little rug out and put it in the trash. And he said, "No, it's really, really full. There's no more room in there." Well, my question to him is that fact or is that your story? So, you know, we kind of live in stories sometimes, and to be aware of them is going to make us so much more, it's going to get us where we want and get the better results. The second one is villain stories. These are our favorite fabrications. We use them to turn human beings into carcasses. The boss who is zealous about quality is a control freak. That's a villain story. The coworker who details everything and is careful and is tedious and timid. How about the neighbor who goes to church every Sunday is a fanatic? So the villain stories is where we really tear into other people. The third one is helpless stories. Does anyone know what a helpless story is?
I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Powerless. We see ourselves as powerless. Unlike victim stories where we deny our role in causing a problem or helpless stories, we deny our responsibility to come up with a solution. We lack initiative. As we near, we can figure we have no options for taking healthy actions. So helpless stories are often nothing more than the sucker's choice. It's telling it, if it didn't yell at them, it won't listen. I can't help it. I was born this way. So helpless stories kind of make us feel really powerless. We lose our power. So clever stories, in summary, these are clever stories are... They're stopping us. When we live in stories, we're not going to get us where the results that we want. With time, we become more proficient at telling stories than achieving results. So if you write this equation down, results equals no results plus a clever story. So first you create you control your stories, then your stories control you. You'll get the desired results that you want. Does anyone have any questions or comments before we move on?
I have something. I have been studying, learning skills for confrontation and all that, but when I get into a situation, I realize that I have done my homework and I know all these rules and whatever to do in order to make a healthy conversation, get results, but the other party is blank, has not done anything about it and doesn't know anything about it. And for me, it takes forever energy to make that person understand what my point is and what I want to do. And not most of the time I am successful. So what story can I be fit in?
When you're talking to them, do you feel that they're listening at all?
And not quite, because they are so absorbed in their own wantings and in their own world that I don't even know how to break that shell in order to get to them. They just know they want something and they want to get it. However, they don't have any skills of communication or conversation or whatever, and I have to take all the responsibility to work for both of us. And sometimes I get to the point that I don't really know how to do, because I know up to some point I don't know the whole skills. I'm not expert in it. I just know so much to do, like little things that happens, especially at work. But I don't know how to handle somebody who doesn't know anything about a healthy conversation or getting to like a common ground in order to discuss in a safe, as you mentioned, building a safety. And they just don't want to get there.
The three most important words in a conversation, especially in a case like that, is tell me more. When you engage the other person in more communication, more talking, and it does several different things. It lets them know that you're listening, and it's going to get them to talk more. So if you keep saying, tell me more, then at least they're going to engage into the conversation. And if it's something that they're just not going to talk about, at least you know that right up front. But when you say, tell me more, and then silence, then they'll start talking, and then you can figure out what's wrong, what can I do to change it. But sometimes people engage in the conversation themselves so much that they're, instead of using two ears and one mouth, they're doing the opposite. They're trying to do all the talking and not as much listening. So when you go into a conversation, if you treat it like you have two ears and one mouth by saying, tell me more, and then sometimes that will help.
Isn't what you're also doing with that is you're kind of, if the conversation, if you could look at it as a vertical ladder, and you're halfway to the top, and this other person is all the way down on the bottom ring, sometimes you have to go down to that bottom ring and find something in common, and then you can bring them up to where you are step by step by maintaining that common ground.
Yes, thank you, Liz. That's a perfect example, and that's the mutual purpose and the mutual respect. So by coming down the ladder and figuring out where you're both going and then get there together, that's a good example. Pasha, did that help?
Yes, thanks.
Okay.
Cheryl, this is Marv. Can I back up just a moment?
Sure.
Back to the stories.
Uh-huh.
I got a little confused with the last formula that you gave out. You were talking about living in stories, victim, villain, helpless, which all seem to be kind of negative places where you don't want to be.
That's right.
And then you said results equals no results plus a clever story. So are you referring to a clever story as some story outside of those other things?
When you have results, it's equals no results plus a clever story. So it's getting you the results. In other words, getting rid of the stories in your life will get you the results.
Because what the person only has is a clever story.
So a clever story is a story outside of these other stories you were talking about.
Yes, a clever...
Or a helpless or a victim.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? We're going to talk a little bit about NLP, neuro-linguistic. Has anyone, Liz, I know you've had some work around this, right?
Right.
Anyone else done anything with the NLP?
What does it stand for again?
Neuro-linguistic program.
I can't even pronounce it.
I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you in an email. It's very intensive work on being able to get more results and understand people, and there's just a whole lot that goes into NLP.
Okay.
There's when we communicate with others, there are four different ways, and I'd like you on a piece of paper to make four columns down. Four columns. So in the first column, write the word visual. In the second column, write the word auditory. The third column, kinesthetic. K-I-N-E-S-T-H-E-T-I-C.
Thank you.
And the fourth column, auditory digital. When you study the NLP, you learn which one of these, we all have these within us. It's just which one is our dominant area. Are we visual? Are we auditory? When you deal with customers and clients, and when you're talking to them, it's not so much being able to talk at the level that you are. It's being able to talk at the level that they are. So we're going to talk about what these mean. And sometimes when you deal with a client, you'll be able to tell what they are and change your way of thinking so that they're hearing you better. So under visual, we're going to start giving some examples. Tell me what you think a visual person, what are some of the statements you could do with a visual person that you could say?
I see what you mean.
Good, that's a perfect example. Another one is, how does this look? What else?
Look at this.
Yeah, good.
Anything with a word that has to do with seeing or a visual word.
Right. So when you're talking to a client or a customer and they say things like, oh, I see what you're talking about. Well, that could be a really good indication that they're a visual person. So making statements like, picture this, or how does this look, or imagine if. Another one is this clear? So a visual person will be able to attach to the statements that you're talking about. How you see this happens in your life, how you see. Everyone understand the visual person?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Uh-huh. Let's go to auditory. What are some of the statements an auditory person can bond with?
I hear you.
Yeah, that's a good one. How about listen to this?
Did a bell go off for you?
Yeah, there you go. Another one is, sounds like you... Any other ones you could think of? Is this clicking? Another big one that an auditory person can relate to is resonate. Does that resonate with you? So let's go to the third column, the kinesthetic. Any ideas on this one?
How do you feel?
Mm-hmm. Yep. How does this feel to you? Are you grasping this? Do you have a handle on this? They're kind of the huggy, kissy, and, you know, at the end of an email, when you get an email from someone and they have hugs and then their name, that's, you know, that could be a kinesthetic person. They're a huggy, kissy person. Another phrase would be, let's connect later, or how does this fit? Do you sense that? Another one is, let's play with that idea. Are you comfortable with this? Are you complete with this? Comfort is a big importance to a kinesthetic person. They need that comfort. They need their coffee warmer, their blanket. So if you're dealing with a kinesthetic person, you need to put on the little warm fuzzies. Let me give you an example of how this works. With an auditory person, if you ask them, would you like to go to a movie? An auditory person might say, well, that sounds like a great idea. Okay? If you're a visual person, that can mean yes to you. But to an auditory person, that just means it sounds like a great idea. It's not really a yes. So being able to read other people that you're talking to and talk at their level, not at your level, that could mean the difference between getting a client or losing a client. Or in a conversation, it could mean the difference between the crucial conversation or getting the results you want.
So if someone says, an audio person says, that sounds like a good idea, should the visual person, if realizing, well, that might be a confirmation, but it might not be a confirmation.
That's exactly right.
They should reconfirm, well, can you go today at 2?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So let me give you a for instance with these teleclasses. And I told you to get a piece of paper and a pencil out. Who did I do that for?
Visual.
That's right. And for the rest, I'm a high audio, but, you know, I listen to tapes. I can listen to teleclasses. I can listen. I love to listen. I'm auditory.
Well, even when you're writing it down, because I write down notes, but I more often than not never go back to them.
Mm-hmm.
But just writing them down, I'm saying them to myself. And so that's an auditory exercise as well as a visual.
Very good point,
Liz.
And, you know, they say that when you, the more senses you use in learning, the more you're going to retain it. So as
right.
you hear a conversation, that's one sense. You write it down, it's another. And seeing it because you're writing it, that's another. You're more apt to retain all that you're hearing because you're using more of your senses.
And you're actually feeling how that feels.
Yes, exactly.
Too.
Yep. And an example of that is the auditory person is going to say something like, yeah, that resonates with me. But the kinesthetic might say, that feels good to me. So it's just a matter of how each person is going to say it. And if you tell me something, say, picture this, and I'm an auditory person, it might take me longer to comprehend what you're saying, you know, just a few seconds of picture this. Well, if I'm not a visual person, I might not be following you real clear because picture this, it might be, I might have a hard time picturing this. But if you could figure out as a client what type I am, what communication style, and you talk in the language that I could hear better or understand better, you might have a whole lot better results with me. Any questions before we go to auditory digital?
Cheryl, this is Sherry.
Yeah.
I have a quick question on that.
Yeah.
Do you have, for example, have you ever seen a breakdown of the general population? Is there a higher percentage of people that fall within one category versus the other?
You know, Sherry, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer.
I can give you a tip.
Good. Tell us.
Men are generally visual, and women are generally auditory.
Wow, those are statistics.
And, of course, both have the kinesthetic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yet we all have these four within us. It's just which one are primary. And I'm in process right now of getting a little questionnaire. It's like a little survey to find out what we are. If I... if I'm able to purchase that program, would any of you like to take that for free?
Sure.
Okay.
I think that would be very valuable. If you can quickly sum that up with somebody, you can connect much faster.
Exactly.
I wonder if that would also be a good indicator as you're working on the other senses that are less developed. if it would show your progress.
Yeah.
And I would think it would.
Sure. And the main thing is knowing it about yourself. What's your communication style? And once you know your communication style, it's so much easier to start picking it out in other people.
I had one huge thing that I noticed that helped me a lot, because I was strongly auditory, and as I was had a friend in California who, he always did the driving, and if I needed to drive that same stretch, I wouldn't remember where I went, and he's the one who taught me NLP, but he also suggested that I look closely when we're driving instead of just feeling and enjoying it. And that way it really developed my visual part. And it also helped me get around better.
Very, very good.
But I really have to concentrate. Like if I'm walking in a hospital, which I do quite a bit, it's so easy to get lost with all those turns. And so it really, you know, okay, what's the reference point? And really working hard on that as a visual.
Sure. That's great. And there again, it's your awareness. Awareness is the biggest part of this. And that comes into play too. When you're talking to clients and customers, your awareness of the things that they're saying that will trigger you to what type of communication style is their primary. So if they say something like, well, that looks really good. Well, looks, that might tell you that they're a visual person. Now you know how to communicate better with them. Okay, let's move to the fourth one. Auditory digital. These are the thinkers. Tell me what you think some of the statements would be with an auditory digital. I'll give you the first one. Does this make sense to you? What else? Anyone have any ideas? Another one. What do you think about this? And did you understand? Or did that compute with you? Or can you help me figure it out? These are the people that would retype the whole phone book if they could. These are the thinkers. They get to sort out the data. They're calculating. They like statistics. They like to be on track. The auditory digital people are the ones also that are going to like this graph that we're working on right now. The thinkers like to have things in order. So that's another area. If you're in partnership with another person and they might be auditory digital, it's a lot easier to make connections with them when you're talking at their level of what they could hear best, what they like the conversation so they can have the same mutual purpose. You can have a healthier conversation if you're talking in their language but still knowing what you're trying to say. So you can see the importance of not only knowing your own communication style, but knowing the communication style of the people around you, and especially in a crucial conversation, you're going to get more results from this. So let me just recap. The visual person, they visualize what was being said or done. Auditory, they like to hear all the words. Sometimes they don't need to write it down. These are the people like in the back of a seminar. If I'm given a seminar and I look around and, you know, there's a couple people that haven't written down a single thing and I'm thinking, oh, geez. These are the people that are auditory. They hear things, they remember things, and if I were to go back and ask them something from a week ago, they store it in their memory. They're great. These are the auditory, the kinesthetic. These are the physical movements, the furious note takers. They keep it. They keep the pace, and they like the hugs. The auditory digital. These are the people that sort out the data, and they like to think. Okay, any comments on that, or what?
I wonder why they call it auditory digital and not just digital.
They like to listen. It's kind of the mental, the auditory digital. It's the mental part of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I got it. I hear what you're saying. See, I'm auditory.
There you go. Okay, we're almost at the end of the call. I would like to make a comment here that starting in January, I'm going to have a 5-week communication class, and it will be more extensive of what you've heard today. There'll be a lot more and a lot more detail on communicating better to get more results. The 5-week class is $199, but for people that register early and for elite members, it's $99. So, and there's only only a limited amount of people that I'm going to take. So, if you're interested in this, please let me know. I probably will not start advertising for this for a few weeks. So, I'm giving the elite members and people of the guest members of the community first chance before I advertise. So that will be coming up starting in January. And some of the things you'll get from this class by the time you're done is you'll be able to tame those tough conversations with people when you don't get the results that you'd like, the desired results. You'll be able to get more results in a day-to-day conversation. You'll learn more about the conversation tools to get you there. You'll learn how to get over the fight or flight syndrome and have happier and better conversations. You'll be able to recognize when you're living within your story. This could be a 6-week class all in its own, is learning and dealing with living in your stories. And then there'll also be a wealth of information and tools of online learning, and I'll have a couple sessions that will be PowerPoint where you'll go on to my website and you'll see all the different things that I'm talking about. It'll be like a webinar. So if you're interested in that, let me know. Now what I would like to do is hear from each of you what you're taking away from the class today. What is something that you'll be able to use?
The auditory digital I had been less familiar with than the other three, so that was good to get that piece filled in.
Great. Thank you, Liz.
This is Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Just tying in the NLP into the crucial conversation, particularly the shared pool of meaning, so that when you start talking, you can talk in the language of your person that you're engaging with. I thought that was an interesting point.
Great. Thank you, Pete.
This is Marv. Cheryl was very informative. A lot of it, of course, is sort of common sense, but we need to be reminded of many of these different aspects of what we do or what we should do. And regarding the NLP, I never even heard of it before, so that was very interesting to me to now make me aware that I sort of have to pay attention to or try to put people into one or the other of those categories. So it was very informative. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Marv.
This is Sherry. I would completely agree with Marv on that one. It just kind of enforced with me the importance of paying attention and being more outwardly focused instead of inwardly focused when engaged in a conversation.
Great. Thank you.
There's a good beginner book on NLP called Using Your Brain for a Change, and it's written by Richard Bandler.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a auditory digital person, and he is a computer geek, but it was written in the, I'm trying to think, maybe the 70s,
mm-hmm.
And really he has some great examples and exercises he takes you through to understand how you can minimize or maximize an effect or a feeling, and it's just really interesting.
Great. Thank you for that tip. That's great to know. You know, that's one of the mottos that I have, are leaders are readers and they're leaders. So feeding our mind with knowledge is like feeding our body with food. We could never learn enough. I'm a total believer in that. Well, there's a couple challenges that I would like to give to all of you for the week. One is active listening. There's different types of listening. When you're reading the paper and you're listening to your spouse, that's not active listening. When someone is talking to you during this week, I'd like you to pay special attention to actively listen. An example of this is, you know, when I'm working on the computer, I'm in my office, my husband comes in, we have this little massage chair, and he, you know, starts talking, and usually I'll keep on working and listen to what he's saying, but I'm not actively listening, but I am listening. Well, when I became more aware of active listening, I stopped what I was doing on the computer, I turned towards him, I leaned back in my chair, made eye contact, and he talked for just another sentence or two, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, what's wrong?" So active listening is really giving the other person the respect that they deserve, and you'll be amazed at what you get back. So my challenge to you for this week is to do as much active listening as you can. No matter who it is that's talking to you this week, give them the total respect of the active listening. And with that, I would like to bid all of you a wonderful week. And I hope to see you on the next call, which is on the 23rd. This is for elite members, but it's just a small charge. If you're not an elite member and you'd like to be on the call, this would include the call, the auditory program afterwards, and the notes from the class.
Okay. You said October 23rd?
Uh-huh. The title?
Saturday.
I'm sorry. Oh, wait. I'm on the wrong calendar. Sorry. It is October 26th.
Great. Thanks.
And our guest speaker this month is on October 21st, Jamie, and you probably all read that in the journal. She is wonderful. You ask her different questions about your business, and she is just fabulous. I'd highly recommend, if you can make it on the 21st at 8 o'clock, she's great. So you all have a wonderful week, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Cheryl.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.